just introduce Rabbi Liebtag and thank him for being with us. And it's really a wonderful opportunity for us. I said the same thing to our senior students. I heard a sheet work from him, and he was certainly not disappointing in any way then. And the whole, I'll call it the literary approach, looking at Tanakh in a thematic way. I think in a large degree, Rabbi Liebtag, certainly in the Orthodox world, has had a significant role in getting us to think in those terms and opening up our eyes to the big picture. And I asked him when we were talking about themes to pick up on for our workshop, that was the thing that I thought would be most advantageous, to think about it pedagogically, how to approach developing our lessons, and even thinking about Tanakh thematically. So we're very happy that you're here.
I want to begin with two little triggers that I do for fun of it to introduce the topic for students, but the trigger will hopefully get my point across. Kids come to Israel for a year. I ask them to make a list of 10 different places in Jerusalem they all know. Give me examples that they're going to put on the list.
No.
That they do know. The Kotel, yeah. Rehovot Ben Yehuda, right? And we change it from year to year. Okay, 10 favorites. You understand the whole thing. Yeah. Okay, they make a list. Then I tell them, I give a big piece of paper, I say, I want you to draw a map, right, of where everything, to make a map of Jerusalem so we know where everything's located. And it's so neat what you see. There's always one or two kids that can do it perfectly, but most of them are almost at the total loss. What I compare it to sometimes is when you can drive down the street in your neighborhood, and then you take a helicopter ride, and say, oh, wow, that's why it's called Cherry Hill, because, there's a hill there on the top of a... all of a sudden, the neighborhood, when you go a little bit higher up, you see a much wider picture. So we talk about helicopter rides and plane rides, and then, an astronaut when you see the wider picture. But that's one example of sometimes people are very familiar, at the street level, but difficult to get the students to go a step higher. And on the flip side, there's always the danger that you're always looking from above, you never pay attention to the detail. You always have to have the balance between them. Another fun little, sometimes I try to do, is when they're not paying attention, I'll talk about, you have to drink water in Israel and things like that, is I'm going to ask everyone to take their bowl in front of it. Not even knowing why. And then everyone takes the pulse for 30 seconds, a minute, and then they put down their hand, then ask everyone what time is it. And almost no one can tell you. And I tell you, you're staring at your watch for a whole minute, and you don't know what time it is? And the reason why is simple. Because what happens when you take your pulse, you're staring at the second hand, you don't see the minute hand. I just brought those as examples, what I want to try to get across, of the need, sometimes, to see the wider picture, and at the same time, not lose sight of the little picture. So there's a couple kelim, skills or methodologies I think help get that across. One is what I like to call the outline, which can be an ongoing thing. When you open up a regular book, any textbook, right, front cover, what do you have? You have a nice outline. You know exactly what the book is about. That's the whole thing. You open up these guys, or, open up a Tanakh, right? There's no table of contents. There's no cover, right? No, there's no hint. You know the joke, why in yeshiva don't learn Tanakh? No why? Because there's no haskama on the first page. So that's one thing, you're missing an outline. And what happens is you just have it's almost like an information dump on the kids. Now, what I like to do, and when to do it, you can do it in the beginning of the year, the end of the year as you go along. I like to do it in the beginning, especially kids who've already studied Chumash. Ask him, we're learning, let's say, pick any book. It's not Bereshit, we'll make it for the fun of it, right? Come, make for me an outline of Sefer Bereshit. Let's say you have a kid who's thinking. Now, everyone knows the stories of Sefer Bereshit. What's that cause them to do? It causes them a bit to engage. Now, when you don't make an outline, and you have up to 20 lines, let's say, or up to 15 lines, to make an outline. What's that cause the student to do? We'll do it together. We'll see what happens, okay? Now, to make an outline, there's one stage in between that helps make the outline. The first thing you do is not to think so much. The first thing you do is make a list. Okay, then? Let's list topics without, and you'll see how a list turns into to an outline. But what I want to show you is how to help the students create an outline on their own, not to look in the beginning of the book. A lot of them, like the art school has, like on the side on the paragraph, they have like little summaries. Sometimes they run right to those. If they do, it's not so terrible. But let's do for the fun of it. Let's make an outline of Bereishit without making the outline first. Let's make a list of topics. We'll try to go more or less chapter by chapter. Hope I'm not going to hope okay. Bereishit gives you a teaching Bereishit, right? Okay. What would you call the first topic? Creation. Okay. That's it. You're right here, creation. Okay. I'll pick it right. Okay. Next topic. Okay. Yep, Gan Eden. Okay. So you can argue with this a creation story, you know. But again, just to get to topics. You see, this will be a catalyst. But just making the list, as the kids make the list, it's a catalyst for kids to be involved. Because let's say, what I like to do, if you look in, we'll get to the corner part later on, how to make this exciting. We'll just go straight through it. Okay. After Gan Eden, right. You have Kain. Kain and Hevel, okay? Whatever it is, we'll just call Kain. Okay. Okay. The next one? Okay, without, let's get a little less detail because we have a short board. Next big topic. Yeah, the flood. Okay, get the flood. There's the flood. Then we have Igdabavel, the people for change. Okay? The breezes, okay? Then we have what?
Avram,
okay? And then give me the Avram stories. Okay, we have Avram, we have this Aliyah, and he goes down, Avram goes to Egypt, right? Mitzrayim. And then we have the war. And then we have Brit Ben Karim. Okay, we can skip with Yishmael, then we have Brit Milah, etc. Okay, Brit Milah, we have more, I'll just pick a couple lines here. Then we have these text stories, right? Okay, and I'll make a couple more lines, etc. Okay, you got the pattern, right? Yaakov, etc., etc. Now, that's it for Brishi. Okay, make life easy. Now, that's a list of topics. Now, what do we do next? Right? How do I take those topics, right? And how do I form an outline? You have to make subdivisions. So what do you do? That's when you have to get the kids to analyze. I ask myself, I take this topic, is it relates to, what's it relate more to? To the one beforehand, to the one afterhand, or to the standalone? So for example, what would you put together in the beginning? Probably creation and Gan Eden. Again, you can argue that in class. You can combine them together. Okay? Or if one, you can argue, you can put time in there also. Okay, we'll leave kind of alone for the meantime, and then the flood comes out, right? You can put them together, and then when you get to this level, what do you have to do? You have to give new names. You follow? These would be easier. What are we going to call these over here? These would be, okay? These would be Avraham Avinu stories, and these are going to be Yitzhak stories, and these would be Yaakov stories. We might have a little Yishmael guy over here. Yosef. And then you have Yosef and his brothers. I got it? Those would be your topics. Now, let's call this, what do you want to call this, creation? All right, if we put creation and Gan Eden together, then what are we left with? We have the story of Kain, the story of the flood, and Migdal Bavel. Yeah, so then you can group them together and call them, what do we call that, we'll call this together, Chayt V'Onish. Okay, then you have the story of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. You follow? I'm just doing it real simple. Now,
I see a problematic. I'm fine with creation, I'm fine with the Sibray Avraham Yitzhak because each of one of those items relate to each other in a historical sense. Now, the faith of Omnesh doesn't fit.
Does it fit into what?
Doesn't fit in terms of, look at the second tier now.
But see, you're jumping, but that's exactly my point. What I want to do is, you know the answer, and you're working outline backwards. I want to work forward. What groups together? This group together, this group together. Now, if these Chet V'Onesh group together, then we jump because Eric knows the shir already. Okay? but you can call, yeah, but there's definitely a pattern there of Chet V'Onesh. But, or something happens, some consequence and reaction. Exactly. I knew that was going to happen. Okay, that's good. I'm glad you said that because that always happens in class. Okay? But my point is, because you want everything to connect, right? So saying, there's something wrong with it, there's something wrong with my overall definition because this doesn't fit into that. So you're saying these are stories and this isn't. Okay, now, that's exactly what I want to happen. Because what's going to happen now? What happens to the next level? What else can group together? I'll turn your question into an answer. What happened? From Avram and on, here I have stories. About what? Stories about the Avot. And what do I have here? I have stories that aren't about the Avot. Okay? Now, it could be that this is simply our genealogy till we get to them. But what are these stories about? So, Eric mentioned Chet Va'onesh. Right? No, they're definitely not. They're not Avot stories. So you call them Chet Va'onesh stories. And you said maybe if it's Chet Va'onesh stories, maybe Gan Eden is also a Chet Va'onesh story. And then I'm just left with creation.
I think it's all a forerunner for the way of hope.
In other words, God creates everything from Israel.
Right?
Okay. Again, now what's that cause? Now, I have a group of stories here, right? I'll call this non-avot stories, okay? Non-avot stories, and here, avot stories, okay? Or maybe they're chetva onesh stories, or maybe something more general. But what do I find? Two distinct sections in Sefer Bereshit. Okay. But now we get to the tournament. We get to the book fast. Now, we get to here. You follow my point? And that's what the methodology is about. If every book is a book, and almost by definition, a book has what? Something other than the binding, something combined. There's a theme that puts it together. Then the question every student has to ask themselves is, if I have all these different stories in one book, what's the thread that puts them together? Now, if you ask that question before you do this, you're shooting in the air usually. Is that my point? What's Sefer Bereshit about? So someone will say myself. No, when he asks the question, what's Sefer Bereshit about? I always get the same answer. Sorry. I got it. When they ask the question, what's Sefer Bereshit about? So, the first answer is Vayetzev is Simul Bonim, right? Someone says creation. Someone says Am Yisrael. Someone says Eretz Yisrael. There's always, right, the standard answer. Now, what happened? Those answers are more like slogans, right? Weren't the result of a systematic study. They're more or less, was sort of in the air. What I want to try to teach them is to get to that conclusion based on context. So what do? You make your list. Now again, you can argue, this is, let's go to the scientific method. Right? You have data. From data you have to come with a theory. But you want to base your theory on data and be able to support it. So here's my data. But then on each of these stages you can argue. You can argue what the general topic is, but what happens when students do that, you get great conversations in class. For example, is the Gan Eden story a creation story or a Chet Va'onesh story? That question always comes up. I'll show you how Chumash deals with it. This is for sure creation. And then, is the story of the flood? That's Chet Nonesh. Is the story of Migdal Bavel Chet Nonesh or not? That's also a great topic. Are they similar? Yeah, what's going on? And how does the Cain story relate to the flood? Is the Cain story part of Gan Eden? What to do with them? I'm not doing the answer now. I want to give a methodology that there's not necessarily going to get to one straight answer, but it engages the students to think. To think thematically. Am I my point? That was taking a list and turning it into a topic. Now, you can go within the you can do the same thing at a much smaller level earlier. You can do these, how do we go from one story to the next there? What's the progression here? Now, what happens in the end? Let's say this is the title. If I turn this into an outline, this is the title of the outline. Right? Be it. Now, the titles here could go from something very technical. My title is the Book of Genesis, right? Or I can turn that thing into a theme. But the more you go towards here, right, the more you're to the end of the tournament here, the more you're thematic. And here from here you go from data to theme. Okay, because if I need a theme to say, how come I have these stories about Chet Va'onesh before I get to the story of the Avot? Is it technical background or is it thematic background? Now, once I turn this into an outline, so this is my title. This would be Roman numeral 1. Whatever I wrote here would be Roman numeral 1. This would be Roman numeral 2. Got it? Then this is going to be 2. 2A, right? 2B. Outlines. Got that? This would be 1A. And then you're going to get, de facto, you've built your outline. And when kids do that, it's tons of fun. Yeah. I think seniors for sure in high school can do that. I think even our kids on the ball, and they like doing it because they're engaged. Because they get to think and they get to argue in class. The biggest problem with that is there's too much conversation in class. But it causes debate and thinking. But at least they learn to build conclusions from data.
How do you do that with a simple like Yishayah? I mean, it works for creation.
Okay, so I'm not saying you do it the first day of class. This is the only, that's what I'm saying, high school as opposed to elementary school. Elementary school, they're doing the books. Now, there's a difference between Nevi'im Rishonim and Achronim, or between Chumash and even Nevi'im, because Yishael, for example, what binds the book together primarily is Divrei Yishael. It's a collection. It's not necessarily that the structure of the book is thematic. It could be simply be, this happens to be what he wrote, and it could be in historical order, it could be in, if there's meaning to the order of the presentation of the book, that's a great question. In Yirmiyahu, there's much more. In other words, are Nevi'im Achronim simply a data dump? A collection of, Kol Kitvei, bind it together in one book? Or is there, in the order of which the quotes are given, is there meaning, other than that's when they're given, like, with the date stamp? That's a great topic for when you say Nevi'im Achronim. But in Nevi'im Achronim, it's more tense, this is a collection of Nevuot, where Nevi'im Rishonim, it's more of a history. But in Chumash, it's much more exciting. Because there's much more theme involved. Because we have, for example, in Chumash you have the same stories, right? In Sefer, like Hakamat HaMishkan. You have it in Shemot, and you have it in Vayikra, and you have it in Bamidbar. Mentioned. So there's much more, there's much more theme in development than some history. Yeah.
I'm not so sure how, because if you give the title of the outline, the Book of Genesis,
yeah. No, that's the worst title I could give.
Because I don't see any theme in it.
Perfect, exactly. That was, I said the title here is the Book of Genesis is the worst. That's data and not theme at all. Now, let's discuss for a minute. What would you put here for a title? Or before we get to the title, right? What does the title have to explain? It's got to be how part one and part two connect. Got it? Now, if part two, yeah?
Do you want to cross the working title?
You can throw it for the fun of it, yeah.
Foundation.
Okay, you got the foundation. Now, if that's the case, I have to explain why the stories of the Avot, why do I need the story about Cain and Hevel and the flood of Inca Babel, etc., and creation, to tell you about Am Yisrael? Why can't I just start with, have you ever seen?
That's Rabbi Yitzchak's
question. And then you appreciate Rabbi Yitzchak's question. Yeah. Yeah. Now, Divrei Yamim, for example, you ever see Divrei Yamim? The first five lines? Adam, Shaitan, no, they get right to business. Yeah. But, for the fun of it, you can tell the kids Divrei Yamim. Then why can't Sefer Bereshit start the same way? If we just need to know where we came from. Like, I need to know about Cain and Hevel. I need to know about the flood.
Okay.
But then what do I have to do with? Why, in order to know about the stories of the Avot, do I need to know what happened before that? And all the detail about it. So it's why can just a quick genealogy suffice? Now, when you get here, I titled the story of the Avot. But again, that's data. There's much more here. It's not just the story of when they were born, when they died, and everything that happened in their life. There's very limited stories, very specific stories. And if we had time to sit for Bereshit, that's basically doing my series in Bereshit. It's not the story of the Avot. It's the story of the Bechira, right? Of how and why God chooses them, and who's chosen, who's not chosen, and who becomes the family. What do you call these Sodot of Am Yisrael? Who's chosen, and how and why they're chosen, and then. In light of that, then you take this title, and then you go backwards, and then once I get to the title, how do I check it out? I go back to the outline, and say, how does each story here help build my thing, my idea? And my stories about the Avot are the stories about the Avot are coming to explain why they're chosen, how they're chosen, or are they just data dumps? What they did? The story about how Yishmael is kicked out of the family, or how Lot is kicked out. Are those there because it just happened? Right? Or are those stories there because I have to learn something about why we're chosen? What most of the parshanim do always do the latter. So that's one type of methodology that I'd like to do. Again, I don't want to go, there's tons of different answers. This is Bechira, and this is like Chet V'Onesh, and then there's a whole fort there, not a fort. I think it's thematic that the idea that Am Yisrael, if they're chosen, there has to be a reason for them being chosen. And that's basically the way Chazal usually go, that I need to know what went wrong with mankind to appreciate why Am Yisrael was chosen. Again, we're not going to Zionism. My point is, I don't care what the answer is, I'm trying to point out the methodology. And I don't want to begin with sort of saying, this book has to be about how important the land of Israel is, and let's see where I can find it. That's what happens in Sionidu, what do you call that? Zionist, what's Sionidu? Sionidu Umi. That's Sionidu Umi, yeah. That's Sionidu Umi is, right? First of all, I'm a Zionist and Eretz Yisrael is the most important thing there is. And let's go see where in Chumash I can bring a proof to that idea. Our students say that learning Torah all day long is the most important thing. And let's go through Chumash where I can find support for that idea. I'm working the opposite. Let's see what HaKadosh Baruch has to tell us, right? And from that, let's try to understand what my Hashkafah knows. Don't start with Hashkafah and bring a proof from a pasuk. Learn Pesukim and go to Hashkafah. And appreciate other people's Hashkafah. My point is that the people should base their understanding on data, on Pesukim. Again, within, and then appreciate what Chazal said about it. See where it's coming from. So that's one example of Parsha. You can do almost with every book. Some it's easier, harder. And let's say you don't come up with the title. So maybe you don't. Then that's the question. How come the book has four? It might only have four subtitles and nothing really combining them together. Now, if you look, for example, Ramban struggles with that question every single book. Every Hagdamah, every book, he asks himself the question, now what's in this book and what's not in the book? So the Parshanim for sure deal with the question, and it's legitimate. But teaching-wise, if the kids are always doing this, as they're studying the book as a whole, keeping like a little separate outline of the book, and they film the event, is anything that the kid works on his own, always has like what you call like a Kenyan, they appreciate more. Yeah. Now I want to go back to a different tool. This is what I call using outline. And we have the advantage of Chumash doesn't come with an outline. And then the distinction between data and the outline and conclusions. And as you're doing that in class, it's great for discussions in class. I want to take your top cards that you have and take a look in Bereshit, since you're teaching Bereshit now. Can be one of these. I want to talk about Parshiyot. Because we said we don't have outline for Chumash. We do have chapters, but I'm sure you realize chapters are not Jewish. Okay. They're convenient, right? But they don't have kedusha. Okay, one time for a final. Want to see a fun final? I give my class one time. I did for each at the end of the year. I take one example from each book of Chumash of where the Parshiyah division, which we'll talk about soon, differs from the chapter division. Okay? there's tons of them, they're great.
Usually it does conform.
No, not Parshat Shavua. Parshiyot, which we're going to talk about now. Okay, the Parshiyot Pesukot and Stumot. I'll show you a real obvious example in a minute. Okay? Where the Parshiyah division differs from the chapter division. Right? To explain the Havamin of both, what's the Havamin of the chapter division? And the Havamin of the... What's the logic behind each division? And then explain which one you think is better. That's the idea? That's the fun that you can't cheat on. At that point? Because it's a thinking... Okay, now take a look in Bereshit about Parshiyot. I want to talk about Parshiyot for a minute. Hope you know what I'm talking about. Not Parshat Shavua, but Parshiyot Pesukot and Stumot. Now, as opposed to chapter divisions, which are the only thing that comes with Chumash, if anyone knows reading the Sefer Torah, is the Parshiyah division. According to the first Rashi in Vayikra, is why do we get Parshiyot? To give time to Moshe Rabbeinu to digest, sort of reflect on what he learned, and if Moshe Rabbeinu needed time, Kavah Chomer to Ahayu. Now, the most similar thing to Parshiyah divisions are, what part of grammar are they similar to? They're like a paragraph, correct? Now, take a look inside, in Chumash, in the beginning. You need to take there's one over there. We need these for a couple minutes. Look at the Parshiyah divisions, and look in the story of creation. What are they most similar to? Are they like paragraphs? Yeah, right? No, real simple. First six, 7 days are like paragraphs. Okay. And that takes us to the 7 days of creation. Look what happens in Perek Bet Pasuk Dalet, when we begin the Gan Eden story. See that Parshiyah? See how long it goes for? It goes all the way to where? Yeah. Till Gimel Tedvah. I like the one I'm teaching it to kids. Like, that one's too big, right? Okay. Look at the next one. Yeah. See Pasuk Tedzayin? This one is small. The first one's too big to be a paragraph. The next one's too small to be a paragraph. And the third one, you guess already? Now, with kids, it always goes over good. Like, they get the trigger. Now, my question is like this. If you're teaching Chumash, right, and you're using a Koran, what question is going to come up? Why what? But why are certain parts way too big and certain too small? And I think that, you know, if I have a regular one, which is like a paragraph, that makes sense. If I'm going to find more than one topic in a parshia, what's that probably going to indicate? What's the parsha trying to do? Okay. So there's two topics that aren't necessarily obviously connected, and we're connecting them together. It's telling you, look for a connection more than what meets the eye. Now, how about the opposite? When I have something, a one-liner, a two-liner, and it becomes a parshia? What's Chumash coming to do? It's coming to action. I'll give you an example of the problem. When you have a word processor, and writing only in text, right? And no, if you have a word processor that has, you can highlight, bold, underline, everything. Well, so you can have a lot of different things, italic, fine. Let's say you only have just the text stuff, and that's it. Right? I don't have underline, I don't have bold, I don't have, the only thing I have is capital. Or stuff. So what do you do? What do you do to get the impression? What do you have to do? So sometimes you use capital letters, sometimes you put a little star between them. You're very limited. You're very limited in how you can accent something. So the only tool you'll have, the Chumash has, to give over either to accent or to put together are parshiyot. And therefore, as you go through Chumash, over and over again, whenever I have a parshiyot that's too big, that's always going to cause the class to ask the question, but why are these topics together? If I'm going to have a one that's too small, I'm going to ask myself, how come it's there? Let's take an example here. What's the small one about? In Bet Gimel. I'm sorry, in Perek Gimel, but the Tet Zayin. The Kala Visha. So again, you can look how important women are, or look how important the punishment is. You can, you know, depending how, where you stand on that. Okay. And then the next Parshia is also about man's punishment. And then we have another one about coming out of Gan Eden. So if you look at the Gan Eden story, we have one long Parshia that talks about Gan Eden, making Gan Eden and the sin of Gan Eden, and we have three parshiot about punishment. That's emphasizing something. Got it? What's it emphasizing? If I have one long parshia, which combines the whole story together, and right, and at the very end I have three little parshiot that focus just on the punishment. That means I'm telling you there's something important about punishment here, and how it relates to Gan Eden. Now remember the question you asked. Is Gan Eden part of creation or part of sin and punishment? What did the parshiot just do? They're causing you to think about that question. You get the point? Without going into original sin, and how much is Chet? No, the Perek Bet and Gimel has not only the creation of Gan Eden, but together with creation of Gan Eden also has man's sin in Gan Eden. And when it's over, after man's sin, then we get his punishment. But the parshiot might be pointing to the fact that together with man's creation, Gan Eden comes to sin. That's one possible interpretation. You see a lot of other ways. My goal, again, the methodology is using parshiot as a tool to engage students to think. That's my point. And it's sometimes difficult for a teacher because you don't know the real answer. You don't know for sure what the right answer is. And I'm seeing a lot of things in Chumash, I don't think there's only one right answer. It's called Vigita. Chumash, I call it, we'll get that in a minute, I call it intentional ambiguity. Which I think is important to get across to the students, for sure to the teachers, that Chumash is written in a way that he wants there to be, Akash Baruch Hu wants there to be a Machloket Parshanim. There's no doubt about it. There's certain sukkim that are there just, what do you call it? To stimulate, right? The Akedah is a classic example, right? There's no way you can read the Akedah and know exactly what everyone was supposed to do, or what was the right thing, what was the wrong thing, etc. What's the proof? I think it's a perfect thing about the Akedah, because that's so beautiful about Chumash. Every philosopher, right, throughout history, almost talking about life, always brings the Akedah as a proof to his approach. Right? But they always come with different opinions. Now, what did Chumash do? It catalyzed the whole topic of... It catalyzes the whole discussion about man understanding, you know, what's his purpose in life, and how is he really to God's command, or, you know, about morality, and did God command something that's immoral? There's all, you know, tons of philosophy behind it. But that's what's so beautiful about Chumash. It takes one short little story, and it's a catalyst for some tremendous thought. So that comes up a lot, and don't let the kids, you know, in class discussion, again, don't let it get out of hand that intentional ambiguity means you can say whatever you want. But there's definitely certain stories in Chumash that want to leave you thinking. Like when, you know, when Yaakov yells at his kids for thinking over Shem. It's not clear who did the right thing there. Did Yashim Levi do the wrong thing, the right thing?
They get the last word.
Okay. Yeah, we get that, and it's open there.
Eventually,
you're right.
Gato gets the last word.
Yeah, but it takes credit for at the end of the book. Remember, I showed the Tati Bahadir. Question yet? Okay. So that's example of Parshiot. I'll give you one other example. Look in Perek Yud Bet, beginning of Lech Lecha. Perek Yud Bet, the first Parshiot is a nice short one. Avraham Miktav Liyah, it's simple. The second Parshiot, which is Pasuk Yud, in Perek Yud Bet, Pasuk Yud. There's a famine, everyone remembers the story, right? There's a famine, Avraham goes down to Egypt. And then Perek Yud Gimel smack in the middle of it with the story of Lot and Avram separating. So here's another example where Avram going down to Egypt is connected to separation with Lot. And then, that's going to tell you there must be some connection between the stories. What the connection is, you can argue. Okay. But that's an example when students see, whenever you have one Parshiyah in more than one chapter, it's something different. In Perek Yud Dalet, it's simple. Perek Yud has one long Parshiyah, but the reason is simple. For some reason, it's one chapter. It's one story. Every once in a while, something actually is nice and simple. Makes sense. And Perek Yud Vav also, most of the Parshiyot pretty much are straightforward. There's logic to them. But sometimes you have a little nuance. that same thing. Again, I want to use that to teach theme. But the point again in my lecture is different skills that you can use to help teach, to engage students, help think about, to think thematically. Again, elementary school, I don't think it's good to do this at all in elementary school. I think it's much better. Because the kids got to learn to cover ground, translate the words, read them, etc. But it's something I noticed, I talked with Tova Ryan about it the other day, and about it, teachers. You know Tova? But I've been noticing, and not just me, all the teachers, I talked to Ryan, that reading skills in the last 5 years, boys, girls, read skills have gone down. Right? Kids can make landing on Gemara, but they can't read a pasuk straight. Right? They can't read. Now, I think part of it is because we're pretty sensitive to gaze. I'm thinking, all this, fancy stuff. Again, it's part of the follow-up to the Israel programs where, you want to get the kids ready to learn Gemara. You have to be analytical and theme and all these kind of things that we're talking about. And sometimes, and we're so important on getting them advanced that they can't read straight and translate. So I'm not sure where it's coming from, but it's one that we wanted to point it out as well. That on top of all that, the most basic skill, not to let something like this stand in the way of reading. On the other hand, because reading is so tedious and boring, and this is always much more fun in class, it's much more fun to teach. Try to use this as a key to get the kids engaged, but then make sure to go back and make sure they can read things. Yeah. No, not only, I'm saying, in addition, the best way to find theme is simply making a list and finding, the most basic thing in finding theme is making a list of topics. At the most basic unit is your paragraph, right? But what's my paragraph by definition? It's a group of sentences with a common topic. So first I define what each paragraph is about. Then I go, how's the topic of this paragraph? Go to the next paragraph. Next paragraph. After I have that, then I have a unit. And then I go from unit to unit. But the methodology is, I begin with the smallest unit, list it, then go unit, paragraph, 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 make almost like my own chapter or subunit. And then go from unit to unit. And in making an outline, you're forcing the student to think, what's the theme of the book? Progression is how does one topic lead to the next, and what's going on in the book? Now, one of the tools, when I reach a question is, like we had before, is Gan Eden part of the Chedva Onir story, is a part of creation? So there, the Parshiot helped me reach the conclusion, or maybe help me, makes me have even more sometimes, because they're doing something with that. And those become big questions. I'm saying these are tools that help you think, help you are engaged thinking. Yeah. Sure, yeah. My point isn't to take that and come to a conclusion. My point is when I'm taking into consideration development of steam, one of the tools that I can have that comes to my assistance is parshiyot. Now, what conclusion you reach from them? There's no rule of thumb exactly what it means. But it's definitely something that requires you to think about it. If Chumash put the story of creation of man in Gan Eden together with the story of the sin and left the punishments for outside, that's something that requires thinking. And I don't have the answer exactly what it means. But it's coming to tell you something. It's coming to at least make you think about it. I'll get part of the answer to the question. Why do we reach the conclusion that Chet Ba'onesh is going to come up a lot? Because we're not dealing with a history book. What's Chumash in essence? It's a relationship between man and God. And at the most basic level, what's the relationship mean to man? That he's responsible for his deeds. There's one basic message of Chumash, is that man's responsible for what he does. Man has actions, and there's consequences for what he does. That's a very basic thing. I shouldn't be surprised that Chumash begins with that, right up front. But that's the lesson man needs to know. We sort of take it for granted because we're firm already before we start reading. Except that's the point, though. Is here, I don't have... The story of Avraham Avinu doesn't begin with the sin. It begins with being chosen. And the question is, he's being chosen because without this nation, man tends to sin. I think it could be.
Although, you know, on a more esoteric level, you see Chet Ba'onesh even in the life of the
adults, too. Yeah, but they come as part of the... They don't come up front. The story of the Mabul begins, man sins, God punishes. Migdababa, man sins, God punishes. Ganeden also. He makes man and sin and he's punished. The story of Avraham doesn't begin with Avraham's standard. Avraham did a mitzvah and got rewarded. Out of the blue, it says Avraham's chosen. And then Avraham's chosen, Lot isn't. Right? And Lot, you know, Yishmael is not, and he's stuck in.
We're required to essentially, in essence, sometimes Joshua created previously, if Avraham put it out, it was not quite clear why.
Yeah. Why? We've chosen, yeah.
Avraham's furnace. Yeah.
And then you appreciate why the midrashim have to be there. On the end, you have to appreciate the fact that they're not in Chumash. So therefore, you have to use them to balance between them. The fact that they're not in Chumash doesn't mean the midrashim are wrong. It means you have to understand what purpose the midrashim come to play in that in the story. Again, I don't want to give a share on all this stuff, because the whole point is I want to use methodology, but tools that I think help the teacher, especially in high school already, right, help the kids develop how to engage them in thematic thought. Now, one last thing I want to do. I have 5 more minutes? Yeah? 3 more minutes? One last thing, which requires the whole thing, is the flip side of it. When I have a paragraph, it's too long. Let's take, for example, like Shmot Yutet. Let's think of Shmot Yutet real quick. It's right before Mamad Har Sinai. Sometimes you have narratives that are very, very long. And sometimes it's difficult to follow the flow from one part to the next. So one thing which is always good for the kids to do, always, whenever you have them, is to take, until I was talking about the bigger picture, I want to get back to a more basic level. Take a paragraph like Shmot Yutet, which is like 25 psukim, have the kids make their own paragraph. And it's so much fun in class. Give the kids an assignment, and you can do this almost at any grade. Give the kids an assignment. I was going to do it, I was going to have you guys do it, but then, teachers hate being in class. But do it for the fun of it if you want more time. And we don't have time to do it, we're pretty short. We have 15 minutes? Oh, okay, so we'll do one little targil here, okay? Just for the fun of it. Look at Perek Yutet and Shmot. You know, give out English translations if you need. Look at Shmot Yutet, okay? And come up with two sentences I think is too short for a paragraph, and 5, and I think 10 is too big. Okay. What I want you to do is I want you to divide Shmot Yutet. Everyone knows the story, don't you? The story of Mamad Har Sinai. Okay. I want you to divide it into paragraphs. Okay. You know, from Pasuk Aleph to... make the whole paragraph. Okay. Yeah, so we'll work on it again. Oh, they can't hear drum. They would, you know, kids... I always thought there's kids who have their hands cocked in class. You know, questions are wonderful, guys, but there's always kids when they're sitting in class, on the back of their mind is, how can I ask a question? Those kids drive teachers nuts all the time, right? There's always inevitably one kid in class, right? That his goal isn't to ask a question. His goal isn't, he asks a question because something's bothering him. He's thinking, class, how can I ask a question? What can I ask a question about? You know, it's like called the kid's attempt time. So you have to make sure kids So in Israel we always say that the kid, when the kid has the answer, somebody shmor babetem. take a look and try to divide it up into paragraphs. The first two or three would be fine. Obviously, when you've made a paragraph, you give it a title. Got it? That you found, after you've identified a paragraph, what you think is a paragraph, then title it, and you found the methodology, then you have to understand why every pasuk, what makes it fit into that title. If you can't give a title for a set of psukim, then there's not enough to make it a paragraph. I think another minute we'll start. Yes. Okay. So we'll discuss the first one. Everyone found the first paragraph? Okay, we'll take you from where to where? Aleph till? Aleph Ad Zayin.
Wait a second.
Inclusive. Okay. Ad Zayin inclusive? Ad Bad Bichlal?
Including Zayin, and then it's more paragraph than there are two ways.
Okay, we'll take other votes in a minute. Okay. Yeah. Well. Okay, you can do Aleph. Yeah, Aleph. Everyone, you can look at Aleph in parentheses. You can put it there. Yeah, as Akdamah or something or background. Okay. Okay. Anyone besides Aleph?
I said Aleph Ad Vav.
Aleph Ad Vav.
Presentation of term.
Okay. Aleph Ad Vav and.
I'm Ted. Presentation
and acceptance. Okay, and? I said Zayin and I will next. After with Aleph Tavav, I agree with Aleph Tavav.
Aleph Tavav and then Zayin.
Zayin and Gimel.
Okay, so let's
start. I said Zayin and Gimel.
Yeah,
especially
and?
Gimel.
Okay, so yes. let's start from the beginning. First off, some people put Aleph Bet as a little side paragraph. You can go, that's definitely out of the, out of the loop, a prelude or a background or something like that. We'll wonder about that. Then we'll go from Gimel, or Aleph, call it Aleph or Gimel, same thing, to where? I heard to Vav, I heard to Zayin, I heard to Chet, and I hear that every time I teach. I could have told you ahead of time. As long as I have a minion in the room, I'll hear those three answers. I could wage on it. Okay? Now, who said Aleph to Vav? Okay, what, how would you title Aleph to Vav?
Moshe on Har
Sinai. Listen, Aleph to Vav, we'll have some fun here.
Hashem talking to Moshe on Har Sinai.
Moshe, listen, on Har Sinai. I'm going to have fun with this for a second.
Well, it's really
okay. Aleph Tavav Moshe and Har Sinai. Yeah?
Presentation of term.
Or justification for delivery.
Presentation of term. In terms of what?
Mitzvah Hashem.
Terms for what?
Mitzvah the Greek.
Terms for brief.
Okay.
Rules of engagement. Our conditions. Okay. Now again, I don't want to have a discussion what the right answer is, but okay. Okay, I'm not going to get in trouble.
But the hardest part of class, when the kids start talking amongst themselves, but they're actually talking about Torah, so you can't yell at them.
Yeah.
But
I think it's one that's more of a, I think it's more of a teacher's job. I think it's to get the kids engaged and to control the conversation more than to just to give over the information. Because if they have a good engaging conversation about it and have a good argument, they have to make sure that each one gets their opinion right and get the reason for the argument, etc. But I think they'll remember much more when, like the 2-3 minutes I gave you just now. In class, you do 15-20 minutes. But the kids, when the kids prepare that way, it gives them, if you just tell them read the chapter, so they read it and they remember. I'll give you the classic example. You read a chapter, and then what's the test? Mi amar al mi. Or translate these words, etc. Where the kids simply, memorization, remembering thing. But they're not engaged. If you tell them, read the chapter and what? And divide it into paragraphs and have a whole thing about it, then they're engaged. The best example, when you teach Perek Aleph and Bereishis, when you get them to, you fill out the form, there's the Vayomer Elokim, well, each day, that's a whole lot of, again, that could have been another example for a shir, where you get the kids, instead of just reading the first chapter in Bereishis, have them notice that there's a pattern that repeats itself, and notice every command begins with Vayomer Elokim, and then have them find, right? But what each Vayomer Elokim about? You know, to divide it up into stages. And then, wow, then they think they have that great argument, and, you know, what was actually created? What's created and what's purple? Anyway, back to here. Okay? Now, Moshe and Har Sinai, right? That's very general. So, and I would expect it, because the whole chapter talks about Moshe and Har Sinai. So Moshe going up in Har, and now, what's the point? That's technically correct, Moshe and Har Sinai. Is it thematically precise? Got the idea? I want the class to go from technically correct to thematically precise, because that makes them think what's going on in the story. Because the story isn't about Moshe and Har Sinai. The story is about Brit Sinai, right? Brit Sinai. And therefore the second answer, which talking about terms of engagement, or presentation of terms, they relate to what's going to happen later on. Now, most students won't get to that unless they read the whole thing, therefore they're going to revise their outline as they go on and on. Now, what was the other? Who said Aleph Techet? Yeah? And who said Aleph Design? Not included. Aleph Tzad. That's why I asked. Okay. There's Aleph Tzad. Now, watch what happens there. This always happens. Why did you say Aleph Tzad?
Basically, it's this conversation between Moshe, Hashem, and the Israel, and then it ends with Kol Asher Diber Hashem Ba'Aleph. It's not just the term, but it's the acceptance of the term. And then there seems to be a clear thematic shift to this initial conversation, to then the actual preparation.
Okay. Now, Vav and Zayin. I mean, sorry, Zayin Lechet, are B'nai Yisrael's response to the terms. Okay. So therefore, the main topic is, there's no doubt that the main topic is going to be, Gimel Techet, Gimel Tevav. Gimel Tevav are the terms. Now, you call them terms, or you call them the terms of engagement. And Zayin Lechet, right, are accepting those terms. We accept the terms, correct? And before I was sort of prelude, and therefore, this is a good division, but when I have to go like a little bit wider, if I turn this paragraph into outlines, then for sure, I'll combine them together. Get the point? There's nothing wrong, but when you have a double paragraph division, I can make it Aleph Tzad. Okay, basically it's one paragraph with maybe a subdivision. Got the idea? This is fine. Now, but what's that make you do? What's the main point? The main point isn't the acceptance, the main point is the terms. Terms of what? What? Someone said the conversation. You said Moshe and Har Sinai. Is this a conversation between God and Moses?
No. Of course, it doesn't say that.
I know. It's true. There's a conversation going on.
But it's between Israel and Hashem.
Yeah. What's Moshe's job here?
Middleman.
Moshe's the middleman. Now, what always happens? I always get in the beginning. There's a conversation between God and Moshe. Right? But when you whittle down, when you take the class and you begin badgering them. Right? We get terms. What do you realize? Moshe, it's not a conversation between God and Moshe. Moshe is the middleman. And the conversation is really between God and the people of Israel. And the whole point here, there's terms of engagement. Or basically, what you said, it's a proposition. God's making a proposal, and B'nai Israel accept the proposal. So basically, the first topic here is called proposal. So God makes a proposal, and Aleph Techet. And B'nai Israel accept the proposal. Now, the proposal includes conditions. What's the proposal in essence? What's the proposal in the first paragraph? No, that's the proposal? Okay, if we had time again, that's a great thing. To take, what, Sukim? Wait a second.
You're saying, this is a semantic question, but it's moving in the graph. You're saying proposal, if you call it proposal as in proposing terms, or proposal more in
which... No, I know. That's to be done. That's what you're saying, but technically, mostly proposing terms. But what's going on here? God's proposing a covenant. Now, what are the Sukim that are the covenant? Right? Now, you can tell the class the most important psukim here, are psukim hein vav. Right? You can tell that's right, and they won't have to think. You can tell the class to find a paragraph, and you have a whole argument, and they'll get to hein vav is the key. Because they're going to go from conversation to terms and conditions, so you can easily guide the class to get there with no problem. You guys are teachers, so it was a lot faster. Right? But the class will do it a little bit slower. But they'll get it, and then they'll accent that, hey, there's something big going on here. He says, now, the first topic will be then, you know, proposing the terms of a bridge. And then you have the big question, hey, they could say no. Right? They don't say yes. What happens if they said no? Everyone knows the answer. What's everyone going to say in class? But when you did this in class, they'll begin to appreciate what the letters is about. Because no one ever notices that they could have said no. But as soon as you make the outline, you realize they could have said no. Now then, what's the next topic? That got complicated, right? You went from TED to where?
Preparation.
Ted to Ted Bob, pretty much. That's preparation. For what? What? Preparation for what? Yeah. Which is what? What's going to be Mamad Arsha? What are they going to find out?
The
rules. And how are they... How is that going to relate to the proposal, right? They said proposal, they said yes. What's the outcome of that proposal?
What do they have to do to be what?
That's cool. That's so neat. What do they have to do to be Nam Skula? Or what do they have to be Nam Kadosh? There's a big difference. Are these the laws? Listen how cool it is. How neat it is. Are these the laws that Amit has to keep to get reward? Got it? Here, keep these laws and I'll reward you. Or are these laws you have to keep to accomplish a goal? What? I think it's more than that. It's about how you understand Judaism. And my mother's gonna get it. Without going to the philosophy behind it, but you understand? If God's saying, listen, let's make a deal. You keep these laws, I'm gonna reward you. You shine my shoes, and I'll give you what he called. I'll give you 50 cents, right? Or I have a job for you to do. I have a destiny goal for you to do. And these are laws to accomplish a goal. And there might be, how do you understand reward and punishment of Am Yisrael in Torah Mitzvot? It's the difference in day and night. Again, without going into, I think we can bring it for Mr. Shmuel. But that's a big point that comes up in Chumash Allah when you're studying. How do you understand, when you pinpoint that topic in study, then that makes great room for discussion in class of how, what are the terms, what's Mamad Har Sinai all about? And we understand that taking them don't stand alone, but they're part of a covenant. And what's behind the covenant? So again, I just wanted to give it, but we have time. My point is, I want to summarize what I wanted to do. My point was that the purpose was to give different tools of to engage students in thematic things. So what we did was number one was the outline idea, just to give them, to have them think that we're dealing with a book, and because it's a book, it's got a common theme. And to help develop a theme of a book is to make a list and slowly turn the list into an outline. It's like data. From going from data to theory, and to be as technical as possible in the beginning, right? And be as thematic as possible at the end. Is that the idea? That can help at almost every level. Second thing, because it's Halakha Moshe Sinai, Parshiyot division, to use those in your study. As you study Chumash, always pay attention to Parshiyot as a rule of thumb. Not necessarily to always have an easy answer for it, but something to engage the students in thinking, in thematic thinking, is one tool. And using sometimes the chapter division, the chapter division was all, whoever made the chapters did thematic thinking. So you can use this guy. What made him think that, as opposed to the other thing is great, like where Peres Bet begins. I'll take an example where Peres Bet really begins more thinking later, so they put Shabbos into Peres Bet. And third was within the when dealing with the paragraph, when paragraphs are too long, to have the students divide paragraphs, big paragraphs, partial, into sub paragraphs, helps them find the progression of faith and helps them identify what's going on inside of a parshia. Those are different tools, which I think for sure in high school, you can throw them into, you know, they're not curricular, but they're the tools that are not extracurricular. They're, what? There's a fancy word for it. Where no matter what curriculum you're doing, they're always helpful. There's a fancy word for that. A pedagogic, okay. Now, those are tools that the teacher can use, and what you gain by it, is, again, you're, the price you're paying is obviously you might have too much discussion in class, but engage the students to think, and for thematic thinking, the most important thing, get the kids to use their, to think on their own, right? Think on their own, and then guide the group thinking without letting it get out of hand, because I think that's the first stage towards later to Chavrutah learning, where when they get in Gemara later on, where they're taking, you know, a text and they think, what the words mean, and then how do I understand, how do I take this reading words into thing and think about them and progression? I think those are very basic steps that help kids develop that.
I have a question regarding the use of an English translation or any translation for the third method you suggested. What extent do you think that might affect dividing a section of the paragraph?
What happens is most kids have the art scroll thing and they've done it for you already. You have little summaries. Now, what you could do in class, which is a lot of fun, I love using translations. Whenever I teach, I make sure someone in class has like 3-4 different translations. There's always the JPS, there's the Bible, art school, the whole thing. And whenever it gets something difficult, right, then, and we see what each translation says, and then we have a discussion, why each translation, and you see most translations are like Lishitosam. Some are literal, some are thematic, some go by Rashi, etc. That helps the kids think so much. So use translations as a tool, not only as because some of the kids get to argue with them, right? And you see where they're coming from. It's always a lot of fun. Now, it should be something you look up, and with that, the same dusha as looking up Rashi. Right? But it's definitely a tool to help them understand the problems in understanding a word. And whenever you have, it's so much fun in class when you have different translations. And now, if you have a discussion beforehand in class, what do you think about it? Means you have 5 different opinions, and then you see each translation. Now, says it differently. There's nothing more the kid loves to think of something and answer. Oh, that's what the Rabban said. They love that, right? If they're able to think it out on their own, and then they see it inside, it's a difference in day and night. And by the way, in the big argument, we're over here already. There's always an argument, can you learn without this whole method of learning, thinking first, try to understand what they are, and then seeing the Parshanim, where the classic method is just, you know, read Pasuk Rashi right away. So it's not out of disrespect for the Parshanim. It's in order to appreciate Parshanim. It's important that the kids understand that. And sometimes the kids maybe don't get it right away. That, oh, you know, that thinking before Parshanim doesn't mean that Parshanim aren't important, or I know more than they do. I want to appreciate the thing. I'm going through the same process. I always give an example, going to a ball game. Right? If you went to a ball game or saw a movie, and afterwards have a discussion about it, so you're involved in the discussion. If you didn't go to the ball game or didn't watch the movie, and a bunch of friends are talking about something, so you overhear something, so you heard about it, but it's not, your involvement in the conversation is much deeper if you went through the experience. Or going to if you read the book, if you've gone through the process of thinking what's going on, and then you see the Parshanim, they read like a piece of cake. If you just read them without thinking first, it's cool. And that's, you know, and that's how they view it. Those are things that are always important to get across in anyway, thanks a lot for...
Very cool.